Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
You had the Democrats on the step of the Capitol over the weekend.
That was so embarrassing.
It was so embarrassing.
So cringe.
So
if you guys didn't see it, and I just saw it for the first time yesterday because
my husband literally asked me, he thought it was a meme when he first saw it.
Right? Well, because it looked like one.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
And we are, what is today, the 100th day?
It's the day. Yes.
Today is the day. So we are 100 days into Trump 2.0. 100 days is always like a big thing. Like, it's always like the honeymoon period, not like Trump would ever get a honeymoon period.
That's proverbial kind of, like, benchmark, if you will, that they always highlight for every president.
I wonder why, I guess 100 days, I don't know. It's like, I feel like 100 days is kind of, do you think that's a fair amount of time?
Well, I mean, when you, I don't, but we also have candidates that tell us during the campaign that they're going to change everything on day one. Yeah. Or that they're even going to change something on day one. Like, why would anybody say that about anything? You literally cannot change anything on day one.
That is,
you can sign
some
papers. You can sign papers, you can sign EOs, you can make a speech, which is wonderful, but there's virtually nothing you can reverse course on completely in the first day. Like,
well, and it's just wild.
This is my intention, but
yeah. The whole concept of the president can come, especially here in the United States, the idea that the president can come in and just automatically make things better or switch things over or change things.
No one should want that.
Well, and if you have to think about the way the U.S. government structure works, we are changing not just presidents every 4 to 8 years, but the legislature every two to six years.
Literally every 2 years, we're switching stuff out.
Yeah.
No, you should want a little bit more time and thoughtful inquiry about stuff and then have it go through the proper channels. That's what you should want.
So for today's episode, we're going to be talking about Trump's first 100 days. We're going to be hitting on a few topics: economy, immigration, culture, government restructuring. Those are kind of like the overhead topics that we're going to be talking about in evaluating on Trump. We're going to share our thoughts, the highs, the lows, how the Democrats are handling it, which they seem to be getting a little pumped up, but they're still not doing great, which I don't know if that's a great place to be in. But before we
get into it, they're just, it's getting awkward. It's getting awkward.
It's getting awkward.
It is.
Okay, but before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have discovered your new favorite podcast. I suggest you hit that follow button to make sure that you don't miss another episode. Reminder, we have merch now. Link in the show notes, link on the Substack. Go get your Pantalones sticker and your Mario Rubio tote. I've gotten some really good reactions on that one, by the way.
I mean, it's pretty good.
Patting myself on the back for that design. Anyways,
yes.
Let's get into today's episode. So first, let's kind of acknowledge that this president came in hot, like the Kool-Aid cartoon from our childhood.
Into a brick wall.
Busting through the walls of the Oval Office, right? Yeah. And so right off the bat, he started off real big. Many, many executive orders. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many executive orders we are in right now.
I did a list in the first 3 weeks or 4 weeks. There was over 40 just in the short amount of time.
It was going to be like 100 EOs or something.
Yeah. I don't
think
it was that. I mean, it's that by now, but I don't think it was that the first week. But I mean, you don't have to be a Republican or a Trump supporter to acknowledge that the first 100 days of his presidency has been like nothing we've ever seen before.
Oh,
I don't care what president you're talking about. Nothing has ever moved at breakneck speed like this and been as, oh, I don't know what the word is. It just, it's revolutionary in a sense. It's very fast moving. And it is, I don't want to use the word effective to describe it, although many of his policies that he's enacting,
I think the challenge has been, some of them have been like very effective, and then some challenges have been like they've been so disruptive that, first of all, their effectiveness needs a longer runway, for one.
Right.
Some
Effectiveness was dulled because of the mistakes made, or because of how fast they were moving, they would omit things or whatever. But all in all, everybody has to admit, there's never been anything like this.
Well, which I think is one of the reasons that he's getting the reaction that he's getting, especially from the Democrats, obviously. Oh, I mean, not only is it just because he's Trump and he's a Republican, or he's the Republican president, but also just it is so unprecedented, for lack of a better word, which is that there's just like a lot of material to convince people like how bad it is, air quoting bad. Mm-hmm. When in context overall, like, you can definitely criticize, there's some things that have been done not great. Like, they haven't been a very smooth launch. But to the degree that everybody's freaking out that it is the end of democracy, which is, there's a, which I was mentioning to you before we started, Axios has this exclusive poll that they got access to, and the headline is "Most Americans See Trump as a." Actually, I was looking at, because at the bottom they had the what do you call it, the mythology, and it said the American Values Survey was conducted online from February 28th to March 20th. The poll is based on a representative sample of 5,025 adults ages 18 and older living in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, who are part of the Ipsos Knowledge Panel. And then the margin of error is 1.69%. And at the 95% confidence level for results based on the entire sample. But that specific, like, I was reading through this, and there, the question was there. Are you concerned, you know, about his, that he could be a dangerous dictator? So it wasn't like they've, that was the question that people are answering yes or no to. But then if you scroll down to the bottom of this article, it does say that 81% of Republicans surveyed said they still believe that Trump is a strong leader who should be given the power he needs to restore America's greatness. And to me, that says, now also overall, his polling, like if you were just to say like overall approval rating, he fluctuates between 40% to 42%. Versus if you look at the Democrats as a whole, you know, when they're polled separately, they're down in the 30s. So now, look, 40% to 42% doesn't sound great, but this is also Trump. And he has never gotten over like a 44% or something like that, even during his first term. So for him, this number isn't catastrophic. However, there was another poll, and I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions about polls. When you see outliers or you see ones that don't make sense, I'm a little more suspicious of them. These ones have been pretty fair across the board.
Consistent. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you were to put, I think there was a poll, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it specifically did a contrast, like in general, Republicans versus Democrats, and the Democrats have shot up like 16 points or something like that, which is not good, especially.
No, it's not good, but messaging matters. And all they're hearing right now is that the sky is falling.
Exactly. And I think that is the crux of it, especially when you were talking about individuals who are in the middle, normies who do not want to be consuming the news 24/7 and don't have the sickness that we are afflicted with. What they're hearing is just the sound around them, which is he is disappearing people. He is mass deporting. Now he's deporting 2-year-olds, and there's no context to that story. He's wearing a blue suit and is disrespectful at the Pope's funeral.
Give me a break.
The blue suit gate to me was like, okay.
They're really, they're going full force. Every, It's almost, I wonder if at these like legacy media board meetings, they just all sit there.
Like
whoever's
in
charge
this?
Just passes out like directives to each person. You're going to attack him from this angle. You're going to attack him from this angle. You're going to attack. I mean, like you would think, and we'll get into it. I don't know if we're even going to talk about it, but if you follow either of us on Instagram, you know that we had thoughts about the White House Correspondents Association.
Yeah,
dinner.
I would. Well, and I you did a whole article on it and stuff.
Yeah. So read Mercedes' article. All I did, I'm lazy. I posted a video, which I thought was particularly ironic, but you know, for all the like applause that these people were giving on, what was it, Saturday night?
Yes, it was Saturday.
They were applauding like Alex Thompson saying we need to be honest. We lost credibility because we aren't being honest. Well, then you need to look at your current information, your current like status as reporters, because all you're doing is picking out every possible negative angle and running with it, as opposed to giving credit where credit is due. They can't possibly bring themselves to applaud Trump for anything good he's done. And there are some things that are just like objectively good that he has done in the first 100 days, and they refuse. And so for people who want to gain back credibility for all the trust that they lost during COVID, during the Biden cover-up, they're not doing a great job, in my opinion. They won't even, they
well,
will
and
not
I just
even
think
surrender an inch that in this kind of like narrative that they're creating, that Trump is an evil dictator and this is extremely dangerous position we're in as a country.
Well, and let's start talking on each of his subjects, because objectively, okay, immigration, hands down, without question, he's killing it, and that is his best category. Okay.
And that's great, because many, many people voted for him with that in their top two.
Well,
or
and
three.
Not just like supportive of immigration, but supportive of mass deportations, like deport everyone. Now, a lot of times it's really frustrating with these polls, because I think like people are like wound up in the moment of when they're answering the poll. And then when they start to see some things implemented, get a little wishy-washy. You know what I mean? Especially like anyone who's
Because we are used to, as a country, especially in the last 4 years, we're accustomed to inactivity.
Well, not only inactivity, but being told that I'm going to do this and then they don't do anything.
And then, so we are used to the government working at a snail's pace. It's a huge joke in our country. I mean, oh, I have to go to the DMV. Government can't run anything efficiently. And so we're used to it. So then when you have someone come in and go, hey, by the way, I'm going to deport a bunch of people. And he gets in there and he's like, yeah, I'm deporting all these illegal immigrants. People are like, wait, what? You are going to do it? But he is objectively just, he is promises made, promises kept. He is coming in there. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. Borders czar Tom Homan was at the White House podium yesterday talking
about how he was fired.
He was fired. Not just him. We got to talk about the signs on the lawn.
Starting today, make no mistake, if you're in the country illegally and you fail to do what the law requires, we will prosecute you, you will go to jail, then we'll deport you. Second of all, penalties for failure to depart, 8 U.S.C. 1253. If you're an alien inside the United States who has a final order, this message is for you. If you have a final order, the Trump administration is committed to enforcing our immigration laws, especially for those aliens who have received final orders of deportation. There are currently around 1.4 million illegal aliens who have been ordered removed but remain here in violation of the law. We will aggressively prosecute, consistent with long-standing law, those aliens for failing or refusing to depart, or who takes other related actions aimed at hindering their removal. You cannot open the door. You cannot answer our questions. You cannot open your car door. You consider it to evade law enforcement. If you fail to leave the United States after receiving a removal order, we can and will issue monetary fines up to $998 a day. Evading your arrest, knowing you have a final order or removal, is a criminal offense. We will prosecute, then we'll deport you. Get your affairs in order. If you're in the country illegally, work with ICE, go to CBP One Home App, and leave on your own. Because we have to find you, deport you, and prosecute you. You'll have a bar placed under you, and you won't come back to this country. You won't be able to come back on a visitor's visa, a tourist visa. If you have a U.S. citizen child, can't petition for you. If you're in this country, will you get your affairs in order and work with us and get yourself removed from this country? That's what law requires, and we're going to enforce that law.
But, like, he, Tom Homan, love him or hate him, and he could not care less if you don't like him, by the way.
Which is my favorite, the most compelling.
I know, because it's you, Masady. The most compelling part of what he said, in my opinion, and he said a lot of compelling things. He talked about immigration not being a victimless act. Correct. He talked about how nobody thinks about the way in which these people are dying at the hands of illegal immigrants. Correct. It's just a headline for these news reporters like, oh, yeah, Laken Riley died. No, talk about it. Talk about her. Talk about how it happened. Because these illegal immigrants and what they are doing is not just impacting them, and then they have to be deported, and we're going to feel sorry for them because they've lost their rights, quote unquote rights, but it's impacting communities. But what I thought was especially compelling that he said was that he's worked under six different administrations.
Yeah, he was under Obama. A lot of people don't even mention that.
George W., Trump, and all going all the way back to Reagan. And so he has worked with all of them and Clinton. And he said Obama and Clinton saw an open border as a security threat. It is a national security threat.
Absolutely.
And even they took steps to secure our border more. But he said Biden is the first president that kept our border open, knowing better. It's on purpose. It was by design. He did nothing to protect our country. And the fact that our legacy media, and I'm always harping on them, but I think it is so important because they shape a prevailing narrative for so many people in our country, whether people know it or not. They will not talk about that.
Biden's. They won't talk about it because, first of all, they failed in calling out the fact that Biden was not cognitively well. Clearly,
correct.
I would put money on the fact that mm-hmm. this border was left open because Biden was not capable to govern, and the people around him were desperate to keep control, desperate to mm-hmm. push their agenda, and they're mm-hmm. the ones that pushed for this to remain open. And remember how we were gaslit. There was an attempted gaslighting, let's put it, mm-hmm. to tell people that they could do nothing about it and that it was the Republicans' fault because they didn't pass the bill.
No, see, all it took was a president who came in and he shut it down. And so for that alone, I mean, I can't understand why a legacy media who is always opining about democracy dies in darkness and truth matters, they can't even bring themselves to be like, yeah, wow.
It well, they're
really
writing books
take,
about
no, but it's wild to me. And then you have Tom Homan standing up there and just giving detailed data about how, nobody's getting in and people are being deported in mass numbers. And this was all possible under Biden. He just had to have the will to do it. Well, we know he didn't. And we know nobody in his administration did either.
Absolutely.
So now, but then let's talk about the White House lawn yesterday. What do you think about it?
I just thought it was the whole thing, because let's remember, not only Homan was up there giving a masterclass mm-hmm. to this media. What was not mentioned or pointed out hardly by any of those questioning in the media was the fact that 99% down decline in illegal immigration. And here's the deal mm-hmm. about this immigration policy. It's not just the deportations of criminal illegal aliens. It's also the fact that, and Caroline Levitt pointed this out during that press conference, it's the ripple effect that it's had. Not only mm-hmm. are the interactions at the border down significantly, but the danger that was happening at the Darien Gap and in other countries who were getting overwhelmed by people mm-hmm. trying to get to the United States also have experienced a positive effect in not having to deal with that situation. And the danger and the damage that was happening in the Darien Gap.
Well, because when you know that you're going to be turned away, you're not coming. There is an incentive structure.
And then we also have the self-deportation. Like, there's an incentive now, self-deport. Get yourself out. Use the CBP Home app, which is now the Home app. And then you can have the opportunity to return later. But mm-hmm. if you do not, I think Homan mentioned it was a fine of $1,000 a day or something like
that. Yeah, and he gave a very stark warning again. He was like, look, we are going to catch you if you are here illegally. And sorry if you have kids and family. And it was also brought on. Did you hear that reporter's question and how he kind of framed the whole
about the
like, these people
posters?
Yeah,
right?
They're being. Well, no. Yes. But then he also was like, what's your answer to these people who are being ripped from their families, trying to make it sympathetic to illegal immigrants?
We all walk by these heinous yard signs that are along Pebble Beach. What is some of the feedback that your ICE agents are getting in the field from the community as they remove these individuals from their families, their neighborhood, their schools, or all the places in their community? What's been the reaction that your ICE agents have gotten from the people who live amongst these individuals?
The morale of ICE and Border Patrol is at all-time high because they're getting to uphold the oath they took and they're enforcing the law. Border Patrol and the Biden administration, I met with hundreds of them. They felt like Uber drivers and tourist agents. These men and women join the ranks of ICE and Border Patrol to enforce the law, make the community safer, and protect national security. I hear it all the time. There's a lot of people in this country who don't like me. I don't care. But when I walk through an airport, I have many people walking up to me and thank me for what I'm doing, and I'm not taking credit for anything. The success of the border and immigration enforcement is President Trump and the men and women wearing that uniform. God bless each and every one of them. But I take a pleasure in seeing it because in 40 years of doing this job, people always want to say, why are you so emotional when you testify? Why are you so emotional on a network? Because if they wore my shoes for 40 years, they'd understand why I'm emotional. I've talked to little girls as young as 9 years old, or raped multiple times by the cartel members. And when you get to your knees and you talk to that little girl and everything innocent and pure has been ripped from her, when you listen to the Lake and Riley, 17 minutes, that young lady fighting for her life. Don't just think, okay, a young woman died. Think of how she died, the terror that she went through, and these children that are sexually assaulted. I stood in the back of a tractor trailer and 19 dead people at my feet that baked to death. Illegal immigration is not a victimless crime. And so every sick person we take off the streets, especially child rapists, it makes this country much safer. Every illegal alien we arrest, public safety threat, one at a time, makes this country safer.
I find it hilarious that this press is always so concerned about family separation and people being ripped from their families who have broken the law, who some of the ones who have been in the, I think except for maybe one of the most recent, which was a mother who was deported, which mm-hmm. we'll get into that. But they've been criminals. It's like the Maryland man story, mm-hmm. which is Abrego Garcia, which we have talked about extensively here, is an MS-13 gang member. And these are the type of people that are like, what do you say to people who feel like they're being ripped from their families and communities? Mind you, we have plenty of American criminals who are ripped from their families on the daily basis.
Yeah, we have nobody reporting on that. Domestic abusers that are ripped from their families, rightfully. And then they always go, well, we're talking about grandmas that have been here for 30 years that are being deported, or fathers that were just trying to come here and brought their... I can't entertain that conversation unless you're going to be honest and supportive of the alternative, of the dangerous criminals being deported. But they're not even... they're not even in agreement that that should be happening. It's well, like any deportation is evil.
And the, I think, evidence of that, especially yesterday, was the reaction. So what do you think? Okay, so the White House, just to give you guys, if you, yesterday morning, I open up my feed and I'm getting videos and pictures that on the White House lawn on what's called Pebble Beach is the area, which is where the media has to set up their cameras mm-hmm. to do hits when you do a hit in front of the White House.
Right.
So where they set up, they put these posters of all the mm-hmm. criminal illegals that were deported and with their mugshot with what crime they committed.
Mm-hmm.
And they just put giant posters all along Pebble Beach. And so it didn't matter what the media would do, they would be in the shot.
And yeah.
Which I
But tell the listener, our fabulous listeners, what the media did because they were so offended.
They were so upset. That's why I'm like, give me a break, because these mm-hmm. are public records of criminals who have caused serious damage and to American citizens. And instead you have one, I don't even know who or who he was with, but he presented this question to Caroline Leavitt about the posters and how they're unkind and the concern. And then on the networks like CNN, blurring out the faces.
The Trump administration is approaching its first 100-day mark with a full court press on the issue of illegal immigration. And they really don't want you to miss it. So they subtly and tastefully decked the White House North Lawn with dozens of yard signs featuring photos of people that the Trump administration claims are in the country illegally, each poster saying arrested and listing the alleged offensive with which they have been charged. CNN's working to confirm the identities and if there are actual allegations against these people. Until then, we are blurring their identities.
Like they're underage minors that are in a video or something.
What?
These are criminals that have abused people, raped children, sold fentanyl in our country. They have done very, very bad things. Burglary, assault.
They show pictures of criminals on their like reporting all the time.
All the time. What is going on?
Like, but like you can't.
Again, it goes back to they just cannot be honest about good things happening. It is a net good when a criminal is sent out of our country.
These are also
the people that are always talking about how our prison system is so bloated and horrible and the conditions are, what? We don't need to add anything else to our prison system. These are not our criminals. These are some other country's criminals. I understand that is very hard for people because they're going to always talk about the one exception of an actual loving father that came here. But the fact remains is that being a loving father or a loving mother doesn't exempt you from laws. And they have given people an opportunity to leave, self-deport, which will offer you an opportunity to come back lawfully, apply for citizenship.
Nobody has a problem with you coming back lawfully.
Right.
Like, nobody has a problem with that.
Great. Excellent. My mother-in-law came here lawfully, became a citizen, did what she was supposed to do. That is what I would encourage all people to do. And I think that is great. That's the type of immigration we deserve and that we desire. But this is just foolishness.
Well, and I think if I was to give them a smidgen of to the media, which is annoying. But
why? Like, why do you do it?
I do it because it's good for people to hear the other side of the argument. I mean, you could argue, which I think is a ridiculous argument, but you don't want to, like, clearly those posters and their placement is a stick in the eye. It's a troll. It's also a way for the administration to force a certain messaging, right?
Yes.
So that is why they're blurring it out, because the media, in their attempt to be independent, don't want to be used as a prop or a toy to push.
Well, guess what? You are a prop and a toy. I've seen the videos of you running from one side of the White House to the other side of the White House because you heard maybe Donald Trump was coming out a different. You all work for him. You just do. And you work for him and he knows you do. And that's what you do. And you need to be reporting honestly. And they can't. They cannot bring themselves to do it. Even after they admitted, some of them admitted that they all were complicit in covering up something like Biden or all of the other hoaxes, Russiagate, everything that they've done in the past.
Well, and it's not like they've stopped. 10 years. The problem is that in addition to that, you have like stupid stuff and egregious stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, you had the Marilyn Mann story, which was Abrego Garcia, which if they had done their actual journalistic duties,
job,
they would have known a little bit more about the story and also just provided a fair headline, right?
Some context.
You can say that he was deported wrongfully, because that is true, only in that he had the withholding order, but you don't have to go and frame it as like this poor dad, Marilyn Mann, innocent man was wrongfully deported by this horrible administration, which is basically what the headlines were doing. Then the most recent one that happened, I think just over the weekend or right before the weekend, is the 2-year-old American who has been deported.
Also not providing any context or explanation.
It is the mother that was deported, and it was the mother who made the choice to take their child with them. Could the child have stayed in the United States with a family member or with their father, which they're not married? And I believe one of the issues with the father is that in the state, I can't remember the state it was, but I think in the state, like the whole custody issue favors the mom if you're not married, because you have to prove that you're the father. And so that was like, there was going to be like some more hoops to jump through in order to do that. But she could have left him with a family member because she had family here.
No, it was her choice.
It was her choice to take the child with her. The child can return to the United States if they choose, or if the mother chooses to send him back with family because they're an American citizen.
Yep.
What I found so ironic about this talking point is, first of all, they hardly mentioned that it was the mother's choice to take the child with her. Second,
inconvenient.
They're like, how dare you deport this American citizen who happened to be a 2-year-old as if they had the good capability choice. To stay.
Yeah.
And then let's do this thought exercise. Let's say, you know what? That is an American citizen. You cannot take that American citizen with you. Okay, so now the government has kidnapped a child.
Yeah.
And then if you separate them, it's family separation.
No. Again, all of these headlines are bordering, if not complete, propaganda. And that's just a fact. It's not me being dramatic about the negligence of our media, but it's exactly what it is. No, I had so many people in my DMs going, oh, this is getting scary. The Trump administration is deporting 2-year-olds. And it's because so many people don't have time to investigate these headlines. They don't have, or they don't have the resources or capability to really look into. I mean, this one's pretty easy. Just read the next paragraph and you'll figure out that's not what it is. But there's so many of these examples of the headlines spinning things, whether it's about the Russia-Ukraine war or October 7th, Russiagate, or celebrities that say certain things and then they do certain things and the two don't match up at all. But it's used to serve a Democrat agenda, a political narrative. Our media has fallen down on the job and they keep acting like they're taking responsibility for what they've done in the past decade to 12 years. And they're just not. They're not changing. They're doubling down on their narrative. And they don't care that they got caught. They don't.
No. Sorry. And I think it's because they're still in the mindset of like how
they're saving America.
America. Or democracy.
They really do.
I think it's hilarious. But okay.
Okay. So border is in the first 100 days, border is a slam dunk. I think he's done a great job.
And I think the problem is here's the problem. You got that going, done well so far. Now,
great.
Where it's going to go to is the people who, like, having to deport people who have more sympathy and pull more emotional or more heartstrings. So that's going to be the challenge. But that's already kind of, like, set. And people are already feeling better about that, so they set that aside. So now we got to move on to Trump's other big issue that he promised to take care of is the economy. The economy, even though the challenges here is – objectively, here are the good things that have happened. Okay. He has opened up domestic energy. He, I think I looked, there have been at least $3 trillion in investments and trade commitments have been reported in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's huge.
And we're talking about like Apple's made commitments, TSMC has made commitments, Oracle, Johnson & Johnson, Eli Lilly, Chobani.
Companies want to be in America. They want to have their base of operations or at least a large portion of them stateside, which is excellent.
So those are all good things. We got space contracts. Inflation is down. Unemployment is at 4.4%. These are all good things. Okay. Problem is, and they were doing, he was doing really well.
Yeah.
Now the challenge happened when Liberation Day came.
Yeah.
And
that
Liberation
was,
Day,
a misstep. There was a little bit of a misstep there.
I definitely think so.
Even if you agree with tariffs, like just blanket tariffs for the whole country, I think everybody can agree that the rollout was sloppy. And it felt like it was kind of put together maybe the day before. I don't know.
That's how it felt.
I wasn't there, but that's how it feels. And optics and like how you present things in politics, we're always saying this, it matters. And the optics of just standing there on the podium with this huge sign and 90% tariffs on small countries, you may have a reason for that. And if you explain that reason to me, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But to the average Joe who is watching a 5-minute like segment on cable news, they're gonna be like, what the heck is happening? Why are we doing this? Let me tell you,
even when it first happened, if you go back and listen to our
episode, we were confused about it.
I think we're still confused. And I was like, this is not exactly how I expected it to be launched or delivered.
Right.
And frankly, I think if I were to be honest, first of all, I don't like the idea of tariffs. I don't mind tariffs with China.
Like at all?
Well, I don't mind strategic tariffs when you're trying to protect industry, especially in regards to China, when you're using them strategically. This whole like blanket tariff situation, I don't agree with. I am definitely more of a free trade person, free and fair trade, which I think is the bigger issue. The bigger issue is, okay, maybe we have free trade, but we don't have fair trade. And that needs to be worked out. However, I do think that the order of this has been done backwards, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think you should have gotten some things down locked with legislation, which I understand that is you're a little impatient about it because Congress is going at a snail's pace. But I think deregulation was very important. Tax breaks are very important. Providing incentives, especially the deregulation, for companies to come to the United States and create manufacturing here in the United States, I think was much more important than when you have a global supply line and you just do blanket tariffs to everyone. Yep. And now it causes big issues. And even for Trump supporters who have small businesses who are unfortunately dependent on global trade and things coming in from India, China, Vietnam, they're really hurting. I get messages about that all the time. And they're concerned that they're not going to be able to make it. They're not going to make it out through the other side.
Yeah.
So it is very, very important. I don't care about the stock market. Now, I am not pulling for my retirement today or tomorrow. I'm pulling for my retirement probably in another 20 years. So I have the leeway to not be so concerned about the stock market.
Yes.
But some people don't. But what I'm more concerned about are the small businesses that want to grow into a larger business and might be taken out. And I want to see people coming to the United States and building here in the United States. Yep. And I think it would have been better to provide those incentives and kind of set things up to stage for the tariffs. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As opposed to just like the blank tariffs to everyone. Thank goodness. Yeah. I have never become such a big fan of the Treasury Secretary in my entire life. I am a politically minded person. I've always been really into the news. The Treasury Secretary was literally the last person on my mind. Right now, Scott Bessent, frankly, probably single-handedly with his, like, the way he speaks, his knowledge, his demeanor, is keeping things calm and ready. And if I'm going to be honest, even though I'm very, like, I like Lutnick as a personality, he is very pro-tariff in this economic team. And I think possibly what happened here was that there was like, because Trump listens to a whole bunch of ideas all at one time. And then he's okay, I think whoever makes the most compelling argument is the one that he goes with.
Or the last one that he talks to.
Yeah. And I think he chose wrong. And I think, and also, I don't think, because from what I'm following, Bessent is not necessarily partaking in the negotiations for these tariff and trade deals. It's mostly, they are actually happening mostly directly with Trump, which is fine. But that to me also says that Bessent was only partially involved in the conversation or was a significant influence in this Tariff Liberation Day launch. And now I think the administration is doing some damage control. I think they're trying to keep everybody calm until there are some kind of trade deals that they can start promoting, even if it's just
We're being told that there are up to, I think it was like between 18 and 20 deals that have been made.
Most of them
the details just haven't. Yeah, and the details just haven't been made public yet. So I agree with you. I think they're doing some damage control. I think if we had to kind of, there's the good, the bad, the ugly of the first 100 days. I think that when it comes to economy, there's some great investments that are being made. That's positive. That's a long-term net good. I think that it's fair for any American to go, I don't feel comfortable with this tariff rollout. I don't like how it was rolled out. I don't like the idea of blanket tariffs on everybody, just to kind of cement our dominance. Don't love that. And to be able to say, I have a small business and this is hurting me. And I have Trump voters who are in my messages going, I voted for Trump. I want what he's providing. I don't even mind tariffs, but the tariffs on China are going to kill my business. It's over for me. Or I'm nervous. I'm scared. I don't know what the next year is going to look like. So I think it's fair to be skeptical.
Well,
and
it's a really hard position to be in, because objectively, the problem is that we become too dependent on them. And that is a national security issue. And I know a lot of the small business aren't necessarily, look, I'm just trying to get, I don't know, this widget from China and only they can develop it. But, you know, we've become too integrated with them and it's not healthy for the economy. And
well, we have to claw back at some point.
Exactly. So I'm not being like unsympathetic. I am actually very sympathetic. It's just like a really hard position to be in. And frankly, like we've talked about before, the analogy of this is a giant carrier ship that was literally about to go off the cliff. that he is trying to redirect in a more positive direction. And the question is he going to be able to pull it off? Is it going to be for the better? I really hope so. And
I hope so.
I definitely have more confidence, even if he tanks it, honestly. I have more confidence. I think the tanking is just going to come sooner than later. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to what was happening with the previous administration, which is like the most negative. As a person that is particularly generally positive, is probably like the most negative possible outcome I could come up with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll see. I think it's in good hands with Bessent. This morning, actually, where we're recording, Caroline Leavitt is doing another briefing this morning with Bessent. So it's clear to me that the administration is aware that immigration is the positive. It's the 100 days, and they're bringing out Bessent to do the PR on the economy. So we'll see how that pans out. Let's go really quick to DOGE and this government restructuring. You're either going to love it or you're going to hate it, okay?
Yeah, so one or the other.
I think for the most part, DOGE and the entire concept of DOGE was well-received in the beginning until it wasn't. And I think, again, this is just a PR issue.
Yep.
And I think one of the biggest challenges here with this administration is that it's being led not only by a disruptor, which is the president, but also people who are comfortable and have been in business of moving fast and breaking things and then putting things together. And that is not what the American public is used to, especially with the beast of the federal government.
Well, and I think things... Look, I understand that if people have been around here or on my Instagram for long enough, they understand I'm a little bit of a stickler for professionalism. I like things to be neat and tidy. I like things to be done just, and I get that there are plenty of people who are like, nope, that's not as important to me. Get stuff done. Let's go. And that's in large part why Trump was elected. They don't need the bureaucratic dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's just for giggles that the bureaucracy always goes through in their suits and ties and all that business. That's very much my brand. And why I'm saying that is because oftentimes it works to be a disruptor like Trump. And then there's other times, like with Liberation Day and like with DOGE rollout, it doesn't work. And you can see the result of not being just a little bit more careful. So the second that Vivek stepped away from DOGE, I felt like Vivek was a little bit of a stabilizing presence when it came to working with Elon. And I understand that I don't believe that there was animosity there, or as much as the media would like to portray that there was. He has ambitions in Ohio. That's fine. But once he kind of peeled himself away and Elon was just allowed to go, and then there was the optics of him standing while all the cabinet members are sitting and speaking kind of above them or at them. And then there was the optics of him in the Oval Office in his t-shirt and hat with Trump. And then there's kind of some of the mistakes that they made along the way of cutting funding for, I don't know, AIDS
there
research.
Was like the AIDS assistance in Africa, which they reinstated right away. But like of those course. Kind of questions, those
it's
kind
the
of
little
mistakes.
Teeny mistakes. Yes. Yeah. It's the small ones that if you just took an extra 5 minutes or really thought through the optics, although I don't think that this administration is as concerned about optics. It doesn't. I mean, they're putting up wanted signs on Pebble Beach at the White House lawn. So
I really don't think they care what
I have to say about it. I'm just saying American people are easily confused about what is going on when everything's moving so quickly. So clarity helps and optics matter. And I think that with DOGE, a lot of the really, really good trimming of the fat that they did was a little bit lost in kind of how chaotic it was rolled out, and it felt like it was. Does that make sense?
I don't know. Absolutely. It totally makes sense because, again, especially when you're dealing with, I think this would be completely different. Clearly, this would be completely different if we were back in the day when we only had 3-4 news networks and they were like actual journalists or at least friendly with the administration. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. No,
I totally
do. And you
can deliver a cohesive message would be a whole lot easier versus now where our news and media, which I think for better or worse, actually a little bit better, is fragmented, where you can curate the message that you're going to get. So you can curate whether it's, look, I don't care what Doge does. The government is bloated and corrupt, and I just want to gut it all. You know what I mean? Okay, well, if that's the case, you're going to love what's going on. You know what I mean? And you're going to be very entertained by it. But most people aren't like that. Most people are watching, I don't know, Love Island on the weekends or whatever.
Oh,
they're not watching White House press conferences on the daily, the entire thing. They're watching like maybe a clip here and there on social media. So it's really challenging. You have to be very disciplined, not only in your messaging, but also in your optics and in your behavior. And I think Doge definitely had that challenge, because Elon Musk in of itself, even though he is, you know, a genius or like a very capable business individual, he is an eccentric. And so it comes off as destabilizing. But we had good things happen during Doge. There were like a ridiculous amount. Like one of the simplest things is one that he brought up was like all of the program subscriptions that the government was subscribed to that had never been logged into and used.
Great.
We're talking about millions of dollars in subscriptions and just like not being used. That is like the simplest thing. Then like the most extensive thing is what was happening with the Social Security.
All the aged out people who were dead.
Yeah. And then the media always wants to come back. Oh, if you hit like, I don't know, 115, you automatically stop receiving payments, or 110 or whatever, of Social Security. Okay. First of all, if you're dead at 80 and you're still in the system until 110, problem on Social Security in itself. But we come to find out that these organizations, these administration offices, don't speak to each other. Their computers are so old, they don't speak to each other. So let's say Medicare or food stamps or whatever doesn't know that the Social Security number over here is supposed to be of a dead person, but it's still active in the system. So they're still collecting benefits. They're not collecting Social Security, but they're collecting Medicare, or they're collecting what other program that they can get access to, because everything is through the Social Security number. These things are problems.
They matter.
Yeah. But they were like, it's just like wild to me. Now, I think to criticize Doge, I think Doge had very lofty goals. I think it remains to be seen what they actually pull out, but the numbers that they were shooting for so far of like cuts and waste aren't on track to deliver the one, I think it was like 1 trillion goal in like 2 years. Now there's still time for that, but it's not looking like they're going to hit that mark. Also,
I mean, that was a very...
I mean, it's
ambitious.
Very, very ambitious, which, I mean, Elon Musk, that is his brand. It's like aim high.
He's like sending rockets into space. Yes.
Yeah. So now we did get significant cuts in at the State Department. It's having a restructuring. The Education Department, which everyone's freaking out. Now, obviously, you're not going to like it if you love the government. Like you had the Democrats on the step of the Capitol over the weekend.
That was so like, embarrassing.
It was so embarrassing.
So cringe.
So
if you guys didn't see it, and I just saw it for the first time yesterday, because
my husband literally asked me, he thought it was a meme when he first saw it.
Well, because it looked like one. There were a bunch of Democrats with Ukraine flags.
Well, it started off at 6 a.m. or something like that. Hakeem Jeffries and Cory Booker, and I think 2 other ones. I have no idea who. Like sat at the Capitol steps, like literally just went to the Capitol steps and sat down and started talking. And this was all in protest of the upcoming budget cuts, because Congress is back. So it was literally the day before Congress, like they had just flown in from their respective states, decided to go sit down at the Capitol steps and start talking, which was like insane. Now that started to spread and more people started to come out and join them. The group got a little bit bigger. But it was never like some giant thing. And honestly, most of the footage, in my personal opinion, obviously I'm biased, looked absolutely ridiculous. Okay.
It reminded me of when all the Democrats during BLM riots all wore the kente cloth and were in that room, like kneeling and having a moment of silence. What are you doing? Stop it.
That vibe.
Get up. You don't even know what you're doing. You don't even know what you're representing right now. Bye. Stop it.
It just looked ridiculous. But
anywho,
real quick, let's move on to anything else on Doge or government restructuring.
No,
what I'm really hoping before we do move on, that Congress gets their butt in action. and locks down some of this restructuring and these cuts.
In the great big beautiful bill, you mean?
Yes. And which
did you hear Rand Paul announce yesterday that he has enough signatures to halt the tariffs going back to the economy? He announced yesterday he has enough support to stop the tariffs. And I'm like, whew, this is setting up to be
I don't know.
A fight.
We'll see. I'll just say that Johnson, who I was not expecting huge things from, has pulled off some pretty impressive feats since he's been speaker. Now, I think a lot of that has been with the assist from the president.
Yep.
But I will say that Johnson's been doing pretty well. And Thune and Johnson seem to be working well together.
They work well together.
Which is the Senate Majority Leader. So I am hopeful, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I really want them, especially with the tax cuts, the deregulation.
Well, if the tax cut thing doesn't sort itself out,
we are screwed.
Coupled,
toasted.
Yeah, yeah. Coupled with the tariff situation, we are, like, we're in a world of hurt.
Muy, muy malo. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk about hold on to your pantalones? Okay. That is when it's.
You want to tank this whole administration? Do that. Let the tax cuts, like.
Well, and here's what's wild about the midterms. What's wild about the midterms is it's just people who I love kind of have the memory of a gnat or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to come to the realization that Democrats switch. First of all, switching out the or losing control of the House immediately is going to put an end to everything. It's going to put an end. It's going to stop. They're going to try to impeach Trump. Okay. First, right off the bat, you're not going to get any legislation passed at all. Like none of this whole immigration situation, I guarantee you, is going to course correct because they're going to, anyway, we didn't even talk about the judges. Okay. Because we haven't even had time for that. So it's not good.
It's not because
they're going to forget about the immigration. The positives of the immigration are going to fall to the side and everybody's going to be rightfully everybody's going to be concerned about the economy. So
like I said a couple weeks ago, if you care about what Trump is doing and you are a fan, then you need to care about the midterm elections in 2026 because it can all end. And you don't want to get to a place like so many people do when the midterms hit and they're like, wait, what happened?
What?
Why? This is why insane people like Miss Sadie and I are like, you need to care about politics because it matters. It's not just a fun hobby that we like spending our time on. It has real life impacts and not just the fancy presidential elections where you can throw the party. The boring midterm elections, the local elections that go on where you live, all of them matter because all of them directly impact what is happening with you. And so if you care about what Trump's doing and you're a big fan, then you need to be eyeing 2026. And in large part, we need to be expressing our desires. Yes, we need to come out, obviously, and vote, but also expressing your desires to your legislators, to your representatives about how you want them to vote on things because it matters. You see what I'm saying?
Sure. So now we have just some small feelings about that.
I do. I'm not passionate about it at all, as you can tell.
So the last topic that I want to cover, which I think will be quick and love it or hate it, on culture and religious freedom specifically, which is, I personally, it's funny, like somebody came at me and was like, this is more than just money. This is about our rights. I'm like, which is exactly why I voted for this man. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the last administration was coming after religious freedoms and the rights
all over the place.
Women
everywhere.
And protecting and defending women. Okay. Yeah.
So you're darn right it's about my rights.
It is about my rights. I absolutely agree with that. Okay. So he, and not to mention like the racist based DEI initiatives. I don't care how you want to, this is about
sugarcoat it.
No, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion is the biggest propaganda and like gaslighting policy, probably of modern times. It is a race based racist program. I want nothing to do with it.
Right.
Goodbye.
Outside of the federal government,
outside of schools, my schools
that the federal government is funding with my money, all of it. Get rid of DEI. I want merit-based everything. I don't care if you're purple, yellow, black, white, beige. Do not care. Merit-based. Get rid of DEI. Sorry, not sorry.
So I'm all for what he's been doing. I don't care if it's executive.
And barring transgender athletes from women's sports, literally every woman on the planet should be in. If they're not. we've got a problem. Yes. If there is a female out there that's, this is not fair. No, you need to sit down and have a come to Jesus with them, because this is absolutely the most easy, simple thing we can all agree on. Literally every human should agree on this. I'm sorry.
Also, which all of this stuff is getting caught up in the courts in some way or mm-hmm. another. But like his moves also to restrict or put an end to gender affirming care for minors, which is medicalizing Great. Minors forever and changing yes. their entire life.
Perfect. Stupid. Get rid of it. It belongs in the trash bin of history. He created a task force against anti-Christian bias led by AG Pambani. I actually haven't looked into that much.
Well, the entire focus of the task force is that the previous administration, first of all, made pretty significant moves against Catholics, yeah. mostly. He pardoned the
groups,
abortion
school
protesters,
yes.
all of it. Because mm-hmm. the claim was, and it really frustrates me, it's like they're unable to understand the difference between respecting religious freedom and the beliefs of people who are of all faiths, by the way. And then them saying, oh, I hate that tongue. Oh, you can't use your, as this argument is to say that religion is antithetical to liberty, is what they're trying mm-hmm. to say. Because of your religious beliefs, you're infringing on, look, I don't care what you do.
See, Ooh. The point was that the government was infringing on my religious beliefs.
Correct.
That was the problem. They have it backwards. They want to be able to infringe on my rights and my liberties as a Christian mother and use government as the tool. That is the opposite of America's founding and the purpose for religious liberties. So
well, and
don't
we
get
just
it.
Saw it with the recent Supreme Court case of Mahmoud versus Taylor.
Yeah.
Like that was happening in Maryland.
I just think the Democrats are significantly undereducated and uninformed about religious liberty and what it actually is.
Well, because they see it as an annoyance
to our country. Yes. And so that's why you see a bunch of politicians, media, influencers talking about how this is religious liberty run amok in Mahmoud versus Taylor. They have no idea what they're talking about. They're just saying things that incite feelings and emotions from the public. But they don't I don't think that they grasp it. So I'm
glad
with all
of this. My only criticism in this category, which is like a
is
criticism
the Harvard lawsuit.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't like necessarily, obviously, I'm not.
Well, we talked about it on the last yeah. episode.
It's, my issue is that they're overreaching with wanting to be able to regulate what mm-hmm. is happening in Harvard. And yeah. I don't like that
yeah.
because it can happen in other schools. So that would probably be my
out.
Biggest hang up. Now, I want to mm-hmm. talk real quick about how the Democrats are behaving oddly.
Again.
As always.
For the 100th day.
I know. Like, it happens all the time. So as we mentioned before, mm-hmm. clearly the messaging, they're falling back and they think they have evidence is why they're doing it. Mm-hmm. They're falling back on the really negative verbiage in regards to Republicans in general and Trump. So Trump is a dictator and the Republicans in general are traitors, apparently.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Because we had a few examples of this. We had the Democrats who were sitting on the Capitol steps, Hakeem Jeffries.
Singing, by the way. They sang.
Well, they did a little sing along. Okay. I don't understand why these Democrats protest and then they sing along. Like, it's please stop.
Yes. All right. I will build this world from love.
Not too bad.
And you must build this world from love.
And you must build this world from love.
Then God will build this world from love. Yada lie, 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 yada lie, lie. Let's build the country we deserve. Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
If you have time to sit and sing, you have time to go to a job. What is going on?
Like, it's just, I don't understand, okay? But Hakeem Jeffries decided to do this little speech. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was quoting Ulysses S. Grant.
Yeah.
This
so
is
we're making analogies to the
war.
Civil War now. Yep.
Correct.
We're making analogies to the Civil War. Great.
And specifically.
Let me guess what he said.
Well, specifically the line where Ulysses S. Grant was trying to be like, because there were several factions going on during the Civil War. And his, what Ulysses S. Grant's statement was that it's more about we are either patriots or we are traitors.
This is a time for us to put principles over party. Principles over party. It reminds me, I think that's a powerful moment for us. Reminds me of a letter that Ulysses Grant was said to have sent at the start of the Civil War. Of course, the great general who subsequently became president. And at that moment of great turmoil in the country literally tearing itself apart, Grant wrote that whatever my prior political positions have been, my prior opinions have been up until this point, I have but only one objective now. And Grant then said, we have a government and laws and a flag, and they must all be sustained. Government, laws, and a flag, and they must all be sustained. And then he said something even deeper than that, because at that time in American history, there were multiple parties. We're in a two-party system right now, but there were multiple parties. And what Grant said is, there are but two parties in America right now, patriots and traitors.
Yep. And let me guess who he was
I wonder who the traitor is in this.
Hinting at being the traitors, yeah. Oh, wait, you and me, Republicans.
Which I thought was, so like, very bold. And that seems to be where it's going. You had a very similar language also from John Ossoff. He is a Georgia senator. He's probably, I would be shocked if he wins re-election.
He's gonna lose, yeah.
Yeah, which, yay. But the other issue is he was in some kind of town hall where someone was really getting worked up. And it's like, we want you to behave or do what. He was like, basically, yes, Trump needs to be impeached. He's done all these things. And then Governor Pritzker from Illinois was probably, to me, the most shocking.
Inflammatory.
Yes, I think that's a good word. Where he, if you guys remember back during 2016, and what is that crazy lady's name? The one with the, she was, oh my gosh, I can't remember her name. She did this whole speech and she was like, you got to harass them at the gas station, at the restaurant.
You talking about Maxine Waters?
Thank you. Yes, Maxine Waters. Okay. So remember she did that whole speech and she was talking about, you got to make Republicans as
you got to be a menace.
Yeah, you have to be a menace and go to the
disrupt
street.
Their lives.
Pritzker literally did the same speech. It's just more polished. He called for mass protest. And he says,
I've never done this before, but now I'm calling for it. Mass protest.
And that Republicans cannot know a moment of peace.
Forward in the times upon which history turns. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace. They have to understand that we will fight their cruelty with every megaphone and microphone that we have. We must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. They must feel in their bones that when we survive this shameful episode of American history with our democracy intact, because we have no alternative but to do just that, that we will relegate their portraits to the museum halls reserved for tyrants and traitors.
Summer is coming, my friends.
Yeah,
summer
exactly.
is coming. Okay.
Yep.
I don't think it's interesting because they seem to have been like having some, like they're getting fired up. The Democrats are, and the Democrat Party is listening to their loudest and most ruckus wing of the party. And that's why you have Pritzker, who, by the way, is a contender for president in 2028, or believed to be a Democrat contender, is out there unapologetically telling people,
calling for mass protests and get in Republicans' faces. Don't let them have any peace.
As if they have no clue what has resulted in
that alone should disqualify him from running for president.
And it's not even like that's the thing. It's not even like the language or the way it's being delivered is a peaceful protest. He's saying mass protest and that Republicans should know no peace. OK, now he is saying it at the ballot box. He's saying it. But I mean,
we know what he means.
Yes.
It's and just we're like, all going to know what he means if they listen to him this summer. Great. I'm not particularly positive this morning. Can you tell?
I know. So finally, before we I want to wrap us up. I just want to bring up some interesting developments that have happened. And I don't understand why Trump is doing this. And I would like your theories on this. OK,
sure.
So Trump sat down for an interview with The Atlantic, not with Goldberg. By the way, just to give you guys a reminder, The Atlantic is the publication that wrote the article that triggered Signalgate with Pete Hegseth. And it was written by the editor, Jeffrey Goldberg. And so The Atlantic was granted an interview. It's a very long interview, which I listened to. It was like, it took an hour. I listened to it because it was so freaking long. It took an hour to listen to.
Did not listen to it. She sent it to me. She's here, listen. I was like, I do not want to do this.
I wouldn't say it was unfair. It was typical of what you, for The Atlantic, it was typical of what you would expect. It wasn't necessarily completely horrible, but it wasn't great either. And they rehashed a lot of, here are all the reminders of why Trump is so horrible. So he did the interview with The Atlantic. He did a profile with The Times. And he is supposed to be sitting down for an interview with NBC. And I cannot remember this journalist's name or whatever, but because you would have expected it to be George Stephanopoulos, but it's not going to be Stephanopoulos because of the whole suit that happened recently. Right. So now it's some no name. Literally, I cannot remember the dude's name. Dude that is going to be sitting down and doing the interview with him. But this guy is, I mean, this guy's basically a Joe Morgoth delight. I don't understand. Like, why do you think he's doing these interviews with outlets that clearly hate him? And do you think it's good or do you think it's bad?
I mean, it depends on who you're going to ask. Democrats are always going to say this furthers their assumption or observation that he's crazy. And then I don't know. I mean, like, your average Republican voter doesn't care that he's sitting down with The Atlantic. They just aren't going to consume that kind of media. I really don't think so. They're going to find their outlets. And then if their outlets mention it, they'll be like, OK, that's weird.
But they're not going to. I'm really confused by it because I don't necessarily
why he's doing
beneficial.
It.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it is either. But I also think that there's a part of Donald Trump that likes to exceed expectations, and he wants to go in, I think, to these
like as a challenge.
Yeah, as a, I'm gonna beat you at your own game. Fine, I know you hate me, obviously, and I'm going to sit down and talk with you because no other president sits down with adversarial.
Not really,
media.
No.
And I
would
say
he
does that all the time.
One of the most interesting parts of the Atlantic article, which you can read at the very beginning, is that they actually tell you the entire process that they went through to get the interview and explain to you what the typical process is to get an interview with a president. So I found that part particularly interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But no, I think that it's pretty simple. I think Trump wants to do as many interviews. He wants to talk to as many people. He wants to get his message out there as much as possible. But I also think there's a part of him that's, you guys all hate me. And so, sure, I'll sit down with you. Why not? It's like fun. It's like a cat playing around with a mouse. You know what I mean? I think that that's Trump's shtick. Because it's not going to do him any good. It's not going to all of a sudden swing a bunch of progressive Atlantic readers
to support
him.
I think
him.
Maybe it's one of his faults. Like, he has, like, this need. Like, he does want people's approval. And so I think that's, he's still maybe trying to get, thinks he can charm his way into getting someone in the media to like him.
Maybe. I don't know. I just don't think he thinks that hard about it. I think he's up 24 hours a day and he fills his days to the brim. And this sounded
like
fun.
It was interesting because
he also might think that this shuts the Signalgate conversation out. Like, I don't know.
I would see that. It's also interesting because in the Atlantic article, one of the things that it pointed out that Trump said he is having the most fun that he has had in a long time.
Yeah.
He's having significantly more fun than he did in his first administration.
For sure.
And I mean, I think that's clear. We can see that. Yeah. So I don't know. How much longer do we have in this presidency?
I feel like we've lived an entire
It's been term. Only 100 days, and it feels like it's been 365 Correct. Or more times
yes.
12.
Yes. Yes.
It feels like. In fact, truly. Yes, I know. So I think we'll see how it works out. I do think that we are at, I don't know, if is a precipice till too dramatic? Yeah.
No, I think that we are at a turning point. Like, some things need to happen and happen really, really quick.
Yeah.
I think.
Tariff Especially situation.
In terms of the economy, we need some answers. We need a positive outlook. We need to start seeing some deal details. We need some answers right quick because people do get impatient and they have a very short memory.
I would say that I do not expect anytime soon for things to be like chill because the media is not going to chill out.
No.
And we've seen them go already through multiple talking points, hoping something would stick. We just got through the due process one. And I feel like the due process one is starting to dwindle because they just realized how it went south with the Marilyn Man story.
Yes.
So we'll
see. I don't think they're going to reflect on that. I think that they're going to double down because messaging is effective. Their messaging is effective. I had Republicans telling me I'm very concerned about this Garcia situation. It looks horrible. He's just a dad. He has kids. And that's because they consume a headline and little more. So messaging is effective. They saw how the Maryland father thing can impact even Republicans. And so they're just going to double down. They're going to keep going. They learn nothing. They learn nothing from their Trump is Hitler diatribe for the last year.
I will say they're attempting their same message.
They're bringing,
different. Yes. They're bringing it back.
Well, they're bringing Hitler back. There was several reels over the weekend where I was like, I posted them. I'm like, oh, look, Hitler has reemerged. It's Hitler again. And people are like, now, Rachel, they didn't say explicitly that they were comparing the two.
Oh, yeah. It was Al Gore.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Al Gore did one. And then, oh, my gosh.
The Atlantic did one. Or was it Newsweek? They did a whole this is how Hitler rose to prominence. Hitler was really nice until he wasn't. He was a dictator. This is how he gained power over the people. And I put it up there and I can't tell you how many Jews I had text me. And they're like, this is so offensive to us. Basically saying, comparing Trump and Hitler. Hitler, who exterminated 6 million humans. And you're telling, it's gross, and you're telling us that Trump's like that? So then what? All of these people who have families that literally were exterminated in the Holocaust, who have now voted for Trump, you're going to compare those two to them? They don't like that. They don't like it at all. It's not good. And they're still doing it. They're just like, it didn't work for us in 2024 at the election. We're going to try it again.
Yeah.
We're going to try it again. We're going to give it another soft launch.
We will see how things pans out. But that is the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. Any more thoughts, concerns, opinions?
No. Smart remarks? No. We just need to take a nap and then get our energy back up for the next 100 days.
Well, now Congress is back. And so the battle is going to be for the big, beautiful bill. The goal initially was Memorial Day. They have pushed that goal back to July 4th. So hopefully they don't push it back anymore.
Right.
And it needs to happen. Get it done. Yeah. Okay.
Get it done. Okay.
Since Rachel, clearly Speaker Johnson is listening to this podcast because he's a friend of Rachel's.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
He's in my cell phone.
Yes. He's exactly. Because he's listening, I'm going to be like, listen, get it done. Now, obviously, he's not listening, but let's just pretend he is. Okay. So that's
in lieu of earmarks, we want you guys to take a minute or two and in the comments, share your thoughts on Trump's first 100 days. Or you can share it on social media, but let this community know what you think he's doing well, what you think's not so great, what you're looking forward to. Kind of give us your entire vibe for the first 100 days.
Yeah, we want to hear from you and we'll share your thoughts on our social media. Hopefully also create some engagement and conversation because I think it'd be really good that you guys talk to each other and not just us. So that would be good. In the meantime, I guess we will see you again on Thursday. Oh, actually, I should probably mention this at the top. On Thursday, yeah. Rachel is abandoning me.
I am.
Yes. Well, you know, it's fine. All it's right. okay. She has childcare issues or challenges, whatever. So I'm actually going to be joined by a previous guest that we had, Amanda Peterson. And we're going to be talking a little bit again about foreign policy and what the heck is going on at the Department of Defense. Because there's rumblings there with some recent firings, what's going on with Hegseth, and what are Trump's ultimate goals, especially with that meeting that he had with Zelensky while at the funeral of the Pope, which that picture was just like
iconic.
Iconic. Okay. So it'll be a little bit different on Thursday, but it'll still be great. So I'll hope to see you here.
Miss all of you so much. Mucho.
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 And that is it for today's episode of Rivera and Rees. I'll be back here on Thursday. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button, leave us a 5-star rating, and leave us a review, because they really help the podcast grow, especially when you share it with a friend. So that is your assignment, in addition to leaving us a comment. And reminder, we have merch. Link is in the show notes. And if you don't want to be listening to this podcast with advertisements, you want to join the community and get some extra content, please consider becoming a paying supporter. The link is in the show notes. That is it for today's episode. We're out. Thank you so much. Here is a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.